I am unashamed. What about you?
So now Shame. people are calling you for like.
Well, my wife called me, and she was like, "Look."
So you're now like a speed dial person for finding stuff. I mean, that's where this is going now.
Well, Missy
Chase
calls
Robertson,
me.
Treasure hunter.
She's like, one of my friend's mom lost her wedding ring, and so I told her that, you know, you could probably find that. I said, babe, you needed to temper expectations.
I mean, did you lose it in a field or something? Or,
well, you know, here's what...
Because I'm thinking, is this like in the house? Or are you now metal detecting people's houses even?
Here's what's crazy is she lost it within the last 2 weeks, and she doesn't remember.
Oh, boy.
But when I met her...
It sounds like me and my cell phone.
Lovely woman. I mean, just loves the Lord and just a busy bee, and she... got rose bushes everywhere in her own garden, and she has a kayak. They have a little break behind their house. Beautiful. Catches fish, and she's like, I kayak. I was like, well, if you lost it in that break, that ring is gone.
Oh, yeah.
So I gave it a whirl. I mean, I put over 4 hours.
Did you find anything else of interest?
I mean, oh, yeah, I found...
Car keys, leftover change.
This story doesn't have a happy ending. I found enough Clad coins for probably a cheeseburger.
And that's where you get paid now.
Found some copper pipe and some brass paraphernalia. You know, they were looking like, where's the ring? I was like... Just didn't happen. It's hard to find gold. Well,
I lost, speaking of finders, keepers, losers, weepers, I lost what we call a drag. A guy sent it to me from Texas. And the drag is what you pull ropes up on the bottom of the river.
Yep.
You have a rope tied to this drag, and you have a hook net down there with a rope going out in front of it.
Mm-hmm.
And with a float on it. Well, sometime in float, boat would hit them or whatever, and the rope would go down on the bottom of the river. So you're sitting there, you got a big weight holding the net, and then a rope going to the float. Well, the float disappears, whatever, so you go out there and you try to find it with that drag.
Right.
The drag's got three claws coming off of it, which it's like this, about this long, about an inch and a half
That's
around.
About a foot long. Today.
Solid cold roll steel, and they had to be built just right. Well, I was trying to get a net off the bottom. I got a hold of the rope, and I'd gun in the motor trying to pull a hook net loose. The net was hung on the bottom of the river, 20 feet of water, current. So I broke my rope. When I was trying to get that other rope, it was hooked to. The drag picked up the rope, and I broke my rope. The rope, gone.
So now the drag is
down. So I looked down, 20 feet of water. My drag's on the bottom of the river, hooked onto another net. And I said, sometime you just got to kiss them goodbye. So I said, forget that. I had somebody build me another one. It was not as up to snuff as this one was. It would do. A decade goes by. 10 years later.
Oh, I thought this was like this week. You're going back a decade.
I'm going back a decade.
Yeah.
So I lose my drag. The drag is gone. 10 years goes by.
I thought this was while Chase is doing his thing.
I had a Bible study with the dude. He's sitting there, and I asked him what he did for a living. You know, what you do when you... He said, I'm a scuba diver. I said, you're what? He said, a scuba diver. I said, what you got to do the next 2 or 3 days? He said, well, you know, I said, get that scuba diving equipment. I have something I want you to pick up off the bottom of the river. I said, the current's down. The river's at pool stage, so it's pretty not swift. I said, I lost a drag. I told him about what I did. I lost it 10 years ago. I said, but it's still there. I said, and you're the only man that can get it. I said, you
never forgot it.
You
let it go, but you never really let it go.
And he said, do you remember where it is? I said, I remember where it is. Exactly. And he said, so you know that river so well, you know where that drag is. I said, I can put you right on top of it. You'll be 20 feet above it, you know, on the water. So we go out there, and they took a couple of days. He comes, he's got his equipment. We pull up there. I'm easing up the river. I'm looking on the bank over there. You know, I'm looking easing along on the bank. And I said, right here. I stopped. I said, right there. I threw me a weight out to hold the boat. And I said, go down right there. You'll find a rope. And when you find the rope, just start down that rope. At some point, you're going to run up on that drag I'm talking about. I told him what it looked like. Had one in the boat kind of like it. I said, we won't take you 5 minutes. He said.
Which means an hour.
Yeah.
He said, because we grew up with 5 minutes.
He said, you know it's there. I said, it's there. So look, he jumps out of the boat like they do, you know, fall backwards out of the boat. I see bubbles, and he gone. So I'm sitting there. I would say
it's all quiet.
5 minutes.
All quiet.
5 minutes. I'm just sitting there. I'm seeing them bubbles roll up from down there somewhere. About 5 minutes goes by. I saw a hand coming up. He had a drag in his hand. He came up.
So he came for the dramatic. The hand up first.
With a drag in his hand. And it, with the rope had about 6 foot of rope on it. Where my rope had broken 10 years earlier.
Success.
He said, man, you got a good memory. He said, that's exactly what happened. I went down, found a rope, went down the rope, and you said it'd be there. It was there.
I wonder how you could see down there.
Yeah, it's murky.
Oh, it's murky.
Couldn't see. He just strictly feel. But I put him right on top. He said, it was exactly right underneath this boat. He said, how did you remember that long?
I'm just glad he lived. Can you imagine? Look, if something happens, he gets tangled up, and it's like, I gave my life for a drag for nets.
That was 10 years ago.
Yeah, I told him to be careful. I said, don't be careful. There's a big treetop down in there somewhere, I said, because, you know, that thing was hung on that treetop.
What about one of them 175-pound alligator gars? That might have been one of them down there, too.
Yeah, you also told me to be careful a few times in my life when I was a kid, and I realized that meant your life
I hope it works out.
In danger, and this is really not worth it.
You know, that when he was describing that, though, you know, my mind took me back to the scene in Jaws, the original Jaws, when they were getting ready to send Hooper down in to, you know, try to see if he could kill that shark. What you describe as a river version of that, where you're just sending the man out.
The story I just told you.
You hope he comes back, you know.
The story I just told you, that was 30 years ago. That's how long it's been. And you say, is your drag still in your boat? That drag still in that boat.
Yesterday, 40 years later.
We used it. I got it. And I said, Dan, watch this. I said, I'm going to throw this drag out. And I said, I'm going to hook a rope out there. And he said, what? I said, I'm going to hook a rope. I want you to back out in the river, and I'm going to drag this weight out further out in the river. I said, I'm too close to the bank. That's reading this net ain't catching. So I threw my drag out, and I started coming up with it, and I got the rope and the weight. And when he backed out in the river, and I dropped that old big weight, that's holding the net on the back end of it, you know. So I told Dan that story, you know. He said, you got to be kidding. I said, no. I said, this old drag was gone for a decade. I said, I rounded it back up, scuba diver.
The story of the drag. I have to write that down.
Yep.
So that sounds a lot better. My story, I was going to tell you, I lost my cell phone for like an hour, but it's just really not that interesting because we found it on Find a Phone, and I don't know.
I've never found a person that didn't lose his cell phone on a regular basis.
Oh, it was.
Well, Phil, that's because you always.
Then you have to start the retracing of your steps. Well, I went here. Did I lay it down there? But the kids all start looking for it with the Find a Phone, and they're like, it's here.
We always find them, get somebody to call.
Yeah.
Or we go in another room, somebody makes a phone call to that number, you know, and you're looking around. One we found in the refrigerator. I said, Miss Kay, how could your cell phone end up in the ice box? It's what we call them, old school ice box.
I remember ice box, yeah.
And she said, well, Evidently, I just went in there. She said it was in between the cabbage and some soft drinks in the refrigerator. She had walked in there to get something, set her phone down. She got a head of lettuce and came out of there, but left the phone. You know, we're trying to track it, but you're not thinking the
refrigerator.
The ringer is ringing inside the refrigerator. Yeah. I said, y'all.
I left here yesterday.
One of hundreds of times that they've been lost.
My last words yesterday when I left here, I was like, well, if I don't find my key, I'll be back. Because I looked everywhere in here. I walked to my truck and I'm looking. I look down. It's in my hand.
And so it begins.
The whole search.
I've hunted for my sunglasses for an hour and then finally figured out they're on the head.
Yeah.
I said, oh, my goodness.
It's pretty embarrassing. So, you know, I found probably half a dozen cell phones metal detecting that had been smashed.
Is that right?
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I thought, should I report this? I mean, you know, whatever happened.
Yeah.
Because they were, now I guess theoretically, they could have been, they, you know, something happened and they were, but they looked like someone smashed them and threw it out.
So somebody's trying to get rid of some evidence. That's the fun part about finding something, Jace, is I get you to get this all the time, is then you get to make up your own story. I was up in Arkansas one time and I was in one of these beautiful lookout points. It's up in the mountains, really pretty. And I looked down on the ground. And this, I'm just, you know, we're just observing the beauty. And I see glass and sand, colored sand. And me being a guy who's done a lot of weddings, I realized what it was. It was somebody did a sand ceremony there, you know, and either dropped it because they pour the two sands in a bottle and it's kind of like symbolizing your life together, whatever. Or, which, and this is a story I went to in my mind, somebody split up or whatever, and they went back to the spot where it all happened and just smashed that thing right there on the spot of, you know, this lookout point. So it was either something that was an accident or it was something that was something bad went down.
You was ridding yourself of the last vestiges.
That's
of
what
one,
I imagined. I imagined
you said you would have
some woman that just got scorned and said, I'm going to go back and smash it into a thing. And it was just glass and sand all over the place. So,
trying to wipe the slate clean.
That's right. Making up a story.
It's hard to run from your past.
So yesterday, Jace, I made an observation when I was leaving out and then it happened again coming down here. So we're mom and dad, the last 15 miles to get out here is the middle of nowhere. I mean, you got a few places, few people dotted around, but it's mostly just woods that are used for, you know, pulp wood and all that. So we grew up, Jason and I grew up, we learned how to drive on all these roads out here. So, you know, I know I'm like the back of my hand, you're talking about the river, but I made an observation because when I'm driving to town or coming out here, I would rather get behind a young redneck than an old redneck because a young redneck runs wide open. Now, they'll tear some stuff up and all that, but they're getting where they got to go. But the old rednecks, which I guess, Dad, you're in this company now, they just drive as slow as they want. They don't care who's behind you. They don't care how long it takes. They're just going to putter because both guys, the guy I got behind yesterday and another guy this morning going about 30 on these roads out here, which is, you know, nearer the speed limit.
35 is
right. So you drive it, don't you? When you drive in, you're just right there humming along.
Some deputy pulled me over and said, Mr. Field, this thing is 35 miles an hour. I said, Jace was with me.
I said, Phil, you were going way too far. We were late to the airport. But well, I think you've told this story a few times. And the guy, you know, he just didn't want to be that guy.
Right. My point is, Jace, so I'm 56 years old. I'm not old enough yet because I'm still going as fast as I can to get out here and to get back to town.
I'm not. Yeah.
So you've already crossed over too.
Sail.
Really?
I mean, I just enjoy the ride.
So I don't know what happened to me.
I'm driving about 30, I'm still about a young 35, redneck. 35, 40.
Yeah, I can't do it. It drives me crazy. Now, in the old days, I would pass these guys, but now I won't do that because that's stupid. It's just how you get killed out here. So I won't pass them, but I'm just like, oh, man, this guy, you know.
Well, there's different fruits of the spirit. So patience may be yours.
I am an impatient man. There's no doubt about it.
I've run up on a lot of vehicles through the years from here to town in the ditch.
Yeah.
in the ditch.
Yeah, that's young redneck.
Or against, you know, rammed pine trees.
Yeah, that's young redneck.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm somewhere in between.
Drunk again.
Most of the time, yeah.
Or
most time it's early in the morning, and you're seeing the results of last night's
something the night before.
Festivities.
Yeah. We come down there and meet up during duck season, probably 5 in the morning. That's a couple hours before daylight.
Yeah.
Well, you would think there wouldn't be any traffic 2 hours before daylight.
I've seen the most disturbing images in my life between 3 and 5 coming to duck hunt.
That's right.
Well,
sometimes it's naked people running down the road.
We've got a myth.
And you wonder,
we've got a
what
myth
are they doing
year.
Running and what are they doing naked? I mean, but
just, well, the old days it was just drinking. Now it's meth. That's just, it's terrible. Let's take a break. So I've told you this before, but I'm still shocked every time I read it, that in 2020, 8 million guns were sold in the U.S. 8 million. That's a lot of guns for 1 year.
Yeah.
I mean, you think about it. Of course, you know, there are a lot of reasons why. You know, people are in a pandemic. There are a lot of rioting and situations going on. So with all that happening, it's obviously created now a lot of guns, so ammo is an issue. And you want to be proficient with all these weapons. I mean, we train ourselves and have since we were kids. Dad, you trained us how to be safe with firearms and how to use them. And, you know, so that we would be safe with each other. And so one of our sponsors is a company called iTarget Pro. And basically, these guys give you a way to be able to dry fire train. So they have kind of a laser bullet goes into your pistol, and you're able to do it on a target through your cell phone. So you don't have to actually use up ammo, which is really good because it's hard to find anyway. So they can all the major calibers they have, 223 in your AR, all these things, check them out. You get to save 10% and you get free shipping if you use the offer code Phil when you check out. So that's iTargetPro.com. Use the offer code Phil. Save you some money and learn how to be more proficient with your weapon. But you know, Jazz, you know what the Almighty did to teach me about patience? Because I'm an impatient man. I always have been. Fight it. He gave me a woman that I love dearly, but she can't leave. She's got a leaving problem. She can't leave the house. She can't leave the church. She can't leave whatever people go eat. She can't leave. Like, it's time to go. You know, it's time to go. Let's go. And she can't leave. And so I had to just wait on her. You know, in the old days, I'd just bow up and leave her or whatever, you know, and then it'd be a whole fight ensues. But I don't do that anymore.
I made sure early with your mother.
Well, I guess I did.
When it's time to go, when I get up and she's like, we're leaving. I said, we're leaving.
The
train's leaving the station.
The way mom has solved y'all's issue with that is that she always lines up her own ride. She depended on you.
That's where you got different options. I mean, you'd like to carpool, especially when you're married. But I just thought it's not worth it. So very seldom do I ride anywhere with anybody, you know, my wife included.
Me too.
I don't either. But with Lisa, I mean, we do an event. She can't leave. Like we get down to the last volunteers, and I try to stay till the last one, get a picture with everybody because these people worked hard to put it on. But then once that happens, I'm ready to go. Like just standing around chit chatting. Al's ready to go back to the hotel. Let's get out of here. She can't leave. She'll be standing in a circle of people. The last ones, there'll be about 6 or 8 of them that put the vent on.
I'm long gone by that time.
Well, right. And so I'm just like, what am I? But it's taught me patience because I'm not going to be ugly to her.
But if it still bothers you, maybe it's not.
Well, it bothers me, but I deal with it. I'm just saying.
There's a long list I've noticed from all of our families. There's a long list of, what do you call them, get-togethers, parties.
There's something going on all the time. You're right.
Almost every other day.
Well, we had Cy this last week, and then
I mean,
Willie's got
I've
a birthday.
I've seen more celebrations in Missy's the last.
I have one.
Missy's got a birthday.
You're invited. Let me tell you.
Hundreds of celebrations.
The one thing, because by the time this airs, I think it'll be after
my
birthday, so I'm good sharing this. I mean, it's a semi-surprise or whatever. But the one thing you get at my party, which I'm 100% producing, which is scary.
I can't believe Missy allowed you to. She doesn't know enough.
I've got enough of the finest meats that I could assemble. I picked them up yesterday. Oh, so one thing, because I figured, look, if you have good food,
that's right.
You've built a foundation for success.
It helps ease the pain.
Forget what, if you go somewhere and it's crappy food.
Well, by the way, if you're going to Willie's the night before, I picked up two whole tenderloins yesterday at Sam's that Stone is cooking for that event. So, well, the one good thing about all these celebrations.
When is that?
That's
today.
That's Wednesday.
Wednesday. You know what's crazy to me?
So what are they celebrating?
Willie's 49th birthday.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
But Phil,
I mean,
you're
you get a family as large as ours, and you're celebrating every birthday that comes along. I mean, I'm just saying it's a little much.
Well, most people in the world celebrate their birthdays every year, but you just don't even acknowledge yours, so that's the difference.
I just don't
When's the last time you had a party
for jumping up and down and a lot of fun off of you being 1 year older than you were, especially when you get to be about 75?
Valid point.
But you were the same at 55.
I'll tell you what, if you come to Missy's birthday party, which could be yours as well, since...
Everybody's
it's
the same.
Day after or whatever.
In fact, Dad's the only one who doesn't have a party plan.
We won't look if you want to come eat you a steak. We won't tell you happy birthday. We'll just act like it's
eat
not.
Eat a steak and leave. So one of the things we didn't highlight when we talked about this at the very first of the chapter in Acts 18, but I wanted to mention it and get y'all's take on it. So Paul was drawn to Priscilla and Aquila originally.
I think it's Aquila.
Or well,
you say Aquila?
Yeah, it's the back then they didn't pronounce the U's like they do, but whatever.
Well, I was curious.
You say Aquila, I say Aquila. Okay. So they were tent makers, and so was Paul. So what drew them together initially? I mean, they may have already been members of the church. I don't know. You know, it doesn't tell us, but it says they were making tents together. And so I just thought that was interesting that Paul, for himself. Decided in his ministry that he didn't want to be supported by the brothers. But he says several times in his letters that support people who work for the church. He didn't have a problem with it. In fact, he said some of them, if you serve as an elder and you're serving the church, you get double honor. You should be paid double. So he didn't have a problem with it, but it was always interesting he didn't want to do it himself. And so I thought about that for myself because I spent most of my life being supported by the brothers, you know, and the sisters. And I appreciate everything they did for my family because I was able to work and make a living while I worked for the church. But now I'm in a position in this season of my life where I don't have to be paid. And so I still do a lot of what I did before, but I just, you know, it's just my donation of time and effort. But I like it better. And so I sort of now for the first time in my life, I get the idea, I think, of why Paul decided he wouldn't do it. There's something... It sort of ties you in a way that's different if you sort of have the freedom to not have to be paid. I don't know.
Well, by the time you get to Acts 18, what struck me is as you cover the various things that came up during their travels, they said to establish the kingdom of God beginning in Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, the end of the earth. If this is a bunch of lies thrown together, because it's either true or false,
yep.
These events, it would be amazing. You would have to have the greatest troop of writers and producers to come up with this many lies and this many events that's happening. And some of them are kind of funny and some of them are very serious and some of them are like outlandish. Some of them are with high spiritual overtones like you wouldn't believe. Like some guy falls out of a window.
Yeah, that's coming up.
And he's dead. So and here's a fallible human being, the Apostle Paul, that raises him from the dead, gives him his life back. But he himself ends up by being beheaded. Yeah. And you just looking at all that, you say, you know, if you were going to make this stuff up, you would have to have an imagination like no one ever. I mean, just think of the events they were writing about, and they're just writing them down like, yeah, and here's what happened, and they're not adding anything. They're just going through, and you say, how in the world could they have dreamed all this up? Mm-hmm. And you go back over into the Gospels, and Jesus just showing up and how he got here and what he had to say, and you getting to put it all together, you say, these people are not lying about this. Yeah. It's too many stories about the same thing, and it's amazing actually to read it.
Well,
and what do y'all think about that?
I agree.
I mean, how could you have dreamed this stuff up?
I've always thought one of the greatest things that helps prove what these things are true, like you said, is the flawed nature of the quote-unquote heroes of your stories.
Yeah.
I mean, these are very flawed people, and recognize that on a regular basis, you know, in terms of each other. I mean,
yeah, they're having a little mischief going together with them and to getting along. And, you know, well, I'm not going anymore with y'all if that's the way you're going to do it. I mean,
they're fighting.
Yeah.
I mean, this family against that
for
family.
People to look and think that these people ever thought themselves as based on their own works,
yeah,
is that they were a little bit better than anybody else. The opposite is shown here.
That's right.
I mean, they were, you're talking about servants.
Well, yeah. I think what's crazy, they had all the Old Testament scriptures and they believed the prophecies that the Messiah is coming.
Yeah.
And so their whole life was a very religious, very family oriented culture where we're waiting for the Son of God, which to me, to believe that, I would have had way more trouble believing that than after he came, just because I'm, right. You know, how many prophecies or predictions, just as a human being, I would have trouble believing that somebody knew what was going to happen.
Because it wasn't available, I don't think, all this information that you read about, that the prophet said this and that, I mean, there was not a lot of people that had access or even could read, and especially depending on what language they spoke. I mean, I'm like you, Jace. I mean, boy, you'd have had to really pull a lot of things together to say, yeah, there's the one right there.
That's right.
When a carpenter walks by. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, so let's take another break.
One of the best measures of how corrupt a country is how rich its leaders get while they're in office. They're not so good at passing laws or governing, but they're great at investing.
Imagine if every American could make money off of war.
In 103 days, that position ends up gaining around 103%. So she made, you know, $2 million plus her original two, so $4
million. I signed, co-sponsored a bill and made too much voluminous flair over it that I wouldn't be seated. So I shut up. The threats that fly around are just absolutely insane.
The Blaze Originals team traveled to Washington, D.C., home to one of the most brilliant financial minds in the world, Nancy Pelosi. In our documentary, Bought and Paid For, How Politicians Get Filthy Rich, we spoke to Reps Matt Gaetz and Chip Roy, George Santos, and the bane of D.C. elites, Unusual Whales, to expose how our elected officials are beating the stock market and, more importantly, what we can do. To watch today, go to congressgetsrich.com and use code RICH to get $30 off an annual subscription to Blaze TV.
Well, that's why his first followers, they were like, where are you from? Well, he said Nazareth. You do a little history on Nazareth, we're talking that's a wrong neighborhood for something good to be coming out of. I mean, they were just like,
nothing good comes out of Nazareth.
We thought you were could be, but now that you're from Nazareth, I don't know. They could not believe it, and they were looking at him. But, of course, you know, that's why you had the role of miracles and these wonders, because then you have the prediction. You look at his character, which I think we underestimate. Just think of all the people who watched him. He never made one mistake any point.
That's hard to do. That's hard to even make up a being like that.
So, I mean, they're looking at it like, because you always think if you're impressed with somebody or a preacher or whatever, and then it's a shock when you find out, oh, he has this past or he has this, you know, this incident, or you see him make a mistake. I mean, leaders mess up all the time.
Sure.
Yeah.
But here's Jesus, never made a mistake. So in every situation, he always did the right thing. And then he has the ability to do these. I just think that some of them put that together and said, you know what? This is it. And that's why they were so bold. Even that's why you get these crazy stories and a lack of fear, because at the end of the goal of being a Christian is you put your faith and trust in living again. So then you become really bold with that in mind, because death's just part of the transition.
Yep.
It's not, you can't be threatened by it.
Well, just think about how difficult it would be, which it was, when the entire religious structure of everything you've ever known for you and your family was denying that he was who he said he was.
Yeah.
And as Jay said, but it was all based on,
or the religion you've been practicing for 1,500
generations
is fixing to be scuttled.
That's right.
Well, I mean,
that would be a
even
shock.
Even though it had been predicted over and over and over, it's still.
Y'all have seen human beings as they go to a little place and we're going to church and they go over, and you've seen what happens when something.
Just a little tradition break.
But can you imagine after someone worships and has a certain way of doing things, human beings for 1,500 years, and I mean, they had a. All the way up to the high priest, I mean, there was a structure, and you saw what all came out of that. Can you imagine saying that's all over now? Yeah. Now we're down to one rule, love God and love your neighbor. I mean, they're like, dude, what?
Too simple.
This same scenario plays itself out, and I do sympathize.
You can't eat catfish for 1,500 years. And all of a sudden, somebody comes along and says, eat anything.
Yep.
They're like, are you talking to me?
I sympathize with them. I mean, once I went over there, I felt that because they're real family-oriented. And they're like, we like the rule system. We like the family get-togethers every whatever it is, Friday night
or the Sabbath.
Shabbat.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's really cool in a way, but it's also like, none of this promises forgiveness or life after the grave.
That's right.
Without Jesus being the Son of God.
By the way, when you read Old Testament history, you realize you don't see hardly anything in there about life after the grave. The concept of heaven to the Jewish mind was not, that wasn't a part of what they are. In fact, they were much more the other way. It was all about the legacy you leave on the earth. It was so important about having sons and, you know, keeping your family name. So they were much more tied to the planet.
And when Peter was in the Apostle Paul in 2 Corinthians 5 and Peter in 2 Peter chapter 1 was talking about their physical deaths and saying, you know, they're going to put their tent aside. They're leaving this body and their soul is going on to be with God. So one of our listeners ask about that, and that she quoted at 1 Thessalonians 4.
Yeah.
She missed that one little part and said, we believe Jesus, don't grieve like the rest of man. We believe Jesus died and rose again.
Right.
And so we believe that God will bring with Jesus at the end of time those who have fallen asleep in him. She missed that little part because she was thinking the soul stays with the body in the grave. So what she missed was, you're going to depart and you're going to leave your body. That's what we groan about. We don't like that part of it.
Right.
But said God made us for his very purpose. So we're going to be with God, your soul and spirit. There's more than just your body at stake here.
Right.
Soul and spirit, they're with God. So you didn't lose Uncle Joe. He's still alive, but he doesn't have his body anymore. It's in the cemetery.
He's waiting.
Well, and even Jesus, when he shows back up, he's going to collect that for him, and he's going to be body, soul, and spirit again, this time an immortal body.
Right. Don't you think it's ironic?
One of the women asked about that. Yep. Well, there it is, honey, right there. 2 Corinthians chapter 5 and 2 Peter chapter 1. Read what Peter had to say and Paul, and you'll get it.
Yep.
But the ironic part is a tent maker. That's what he did. He's talking about tents as the human body.
Yep.
That's right.
I mean, don't you know that every day when he's making tents, he's thinking, yep.
Yep.
That's right.
Yes. This will last for a while. But
you know, tents is...
It won't last for forever, that's for sure.
Making tents means you've got homeless tendencies. Or you're a carny worker.
Tents were a lot bigger deal back in those days. I mean, you know, they were used them a lot more than they do today. Now it's just a big tent.
No, it doesn't matter. A tent's a tent. When your shelter is a tent, you don't have a whole lot of options.
Well, nope. That's true.
You sure don't.
I mean, in 100 BC, I could have figured out how to build a structure.
My two favorite verses in the entire Bible is when the Apostle Peter and the Apostle Paul both said they put that tent aside and they were looking at their physical death. And Paul made an interesting point. He said the beauty of it, although you have to be without your body for a while, he said until Jesus comes back, that he said the beauty of it is that at least you know you're at home with the Lord. So it's better to be on the other side without your body. Your soul's alive because you know you made it. Right. That's basically what he said.
That's my point. If he's looking at your body as a tent, I think you're missing my point. This ain't much.
Not really.
I mean,
he
was comparing it to a tent. I mean, a big win.
It ain't.
You're dead. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's
well,
just,
look, you know it's not much when all it takes is some microbe or something to come along. And, you know, it doesn't take much, you know.
That's why there's...
Get a little rip in this one and you've got some pretty serious issues.
That's why these bodybuilders, they're struggling with living in a tent. So they're like, I'm going to build a brick house.
Oh, yeah.
The problem is...
Are they ever on the wrong track? I appreciate it. You're working out all the time, dude. So but you remember that tent, you hit about my age, 75. I'm telling you, your tent's going to go to leaking a little bit.
If you build a brick house...
A few rips and tears.
Hang on, let's take another break. Well, it was the line Dad used that we've said it before on the podcast, when the big... Bumba come up to you and they've been trying to get you to, you know, share with him.
His parents asked me what I share Jesus with him. They said, because he will not listen to anybody. So you finish the story.
He was quite the bodybuilder.
So I met him in the parking lot.
And Dad's question was, he said, son, you've got quite a physique. And of course, when you said that, he puffed everything.
He torqued up and his muscles just rippled in front of me.
Did he do his little pectoral?
I said, boy, recently graduated because I'm graduating. And when I did, he flexed his arm.
Oh, yeah, so he could feel the steel.
Just a bull.
And then Dad said, I got one question for you, son. How are you going to get it out of the ground? Crickets. It was just like that.
That look in his eyes, he had never been asked that before. That look in his eyes, and I said, you ought to come down there.
You ought to come on down and talk to me about it.
I'll talk about that thing.
And the next day, wasn't it, he showed up?
The next day he showed up. Yeah, he never said a word at any time during the proceedings, before or afterwards.
He's a quiet man.
He's a quiet man.
He is.
But, good dude.
Yeah, but to the point, if it's just about this life, you know, Paul said we're to be pitied more than anybody. It's got to be something more. And it's really interesting because everything they've done up until this point, that was it. I mean, it was just about the legacy you leave. If widows are worried about not having sons to take care of them, it was all just about earth stuff.
But still, it's just difficult to put your faith and trust in this when it's based on a prophecy. You're in the middle of nowhere. I mean, as far as from my perspective, I mean, I go thousands of miles to go see where all this took place. Here I am in America. You're like, you see where people are like, oh, that was something that was some crazy story that happened thousands of years ago. And you think that's relevant? And even in these church settings, you know, they start the church here in Corinth, but I mean, it's basically a pagan world and the Jews got upset in the synagogue and, so you can imagine the ones that came to the Lord had some baggage. Oh, and so he has to remind them of the gospel. Then he goes to Ephesus. Well, their big, big thing was bowing down at this goddess.
Artemis.
Yeah, Artemis, which I don't remember all the details, but I think that was the goddess of the hunt. I mean, if I would have been a Greek
an idol
goddess worshiper, this woman who which was crazy, was a virgin, but she was known as the goddess of fertility, like hunting, you know, bow and arrow, all hunting bow and arrow, but no sex. But that's who they put their faith and trust in and lifted up to find some kind of, you know, sense of purpose, yeah. I guess. And that was and it was like the temple they built was one of the seven wonders of the that world. I mean, it was quite the show.
And there was a demon-possessed girl who was going around, but she recognized something the demon did different about Paul and Silas. And
she's not bad-mouthing them.
No, but she's like, she keeps screaming and yelling, And so finally, I don't know, maybe it's the only miracle in the Bible where it was just basically out of frustration.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it seemed like it just wore on his nerves. He's just, it finally turns around. And he's just like, in the name of Jesus, come out of that girl. Well, it does. Where's it start at?
Well, they go to Ephesus in 18, you know, and then they run upon Apollos, who we said how much confusion there was. You know, he had been, we had gone through this before, but he had been instructed of the will of the Lord. He spoke about Jesus. He had all these things, but he was in the time period of John the Baptist. And so Priscilla and Aquila heard him. They explained the way of God. Then Apollos, you get the impression from chapter 19, because he hadn't even heard of the Holy Spirit. He had just been baptized by John. So then they baptized.
They probably ran upon some of the ones he had been teaching.
Well, right.
You know.
And then this miracle happens that kind of confirms you can receive God's Spirit. And I think they started speaking in tongues. Paul placed his hands on the Holy Spirit. Yeah, they spoke in tongues and prophesied. There were about 12 men in all. And so then Paul goes to the synagogue. I mean, now he's in Ephesus, which is one of my favorite books. Later on, he would write the letter. But then when you go to fast forward to Revelation, Ephesus was one of the churches that John wrote the letter to. In their case, kind of like Corinth, he was like, you left your first love, which reminded you of Corinth. And I was just, it said some of you have done these practices of the, I think it was called Nicolaitans or something like that. And I remember when we were taught that in school, he was basically the opposite of the Temple of Artemis. This was like the pursuit of, evidently this guy had a wife that was so beautiful and he couldn't, keep her at the house. So then he advocated like, what would be the correct word? Multiple sex partners and all this. So then they had that going on. They were like, it wasn't just like they were out cutting up. They were making it a religious thing.
Right.
Which still happens today, by the way.
Yeah.
Why have one wife? Have 100. And we'll just make it part of our religious way. And so I just think when you go back and look at the culture and see the backdrop of these settings, and you then read the book of Ephesians, then it's like, oh, wow. Because it's really about everything you have in God and how powerful he is and how he chose you and how he planned. And then there's all these practical ways to live, not only in your life, but in every relationship is brought up in Ephesians. And ultimately, he's like, you need to put on the armor of God. So there was a lot of character issues going on because of these belief systems that they were battling.
Let's take one last break. And one of the things Jesus in there in verse 13, which is just a funny look to me, funny little story, but it also shows you what they're up against. So verse 13 says some Jews.
Chapter 19.
Some Jews who went around driving out evil spirits tried to invoke the name of the Lord Jesus over those who were demon possessed. So these guys are Jews. They're going around this city here in Ephesus, and they're casting out demons, but they decide they're going to use Jesus' name. They would say, in the name of Jesus, whom Paul preaches, because see, well, he wasn't their Lord, I command you to come out. And so verse 14 says, seven sons of Sceva, a Jewish chief priest, were doing this. One day the evil spirit answered them, Jesus I know, and I know about Paul, but who are you? Now, if you can answer by demon, I have a feeling whatever's supposed to happen next is not going to be good. Then the man who had the evil spirit jumped on them and overpowered them all, 1 on 7. He gave them such a beating that they ran out of the house naked and bleeding. I mean, it's one of my favorite stories in Acts because it's so random. But at the same time, what a world. That's what you're describing. What a wild, wild west you know.
Then they had these public burnings of all the scrolls that were practicing sorcery and all. I mean, I just kind of get a visual image of you have this crazy thing, and then you have a big bonfire. In a good thing, you know, destroy it. Well, where was the other story that you were talking about?
I think that we've already passed it. I thought it was.
Yeah, that's where I couldn't figure out.
Yeah, we already did that a while back, but it was the same kind of thing. But it was.
Yeah, she was just. It was an annoying.
Right. Yeah. But it was the same thing about what made me think about it. I thought it was this context, but I think it was back at Iconium. But the idea is that these cities that Paul's going to were set up basically on religious notion, you know, quote unquote, the way it was always a God and sacrifice and this, that, and there. But it was all done with such a crazy, you know, the way that their worship, for lack of a better word, was something that we can't even hardly recognize. This is a decadent.
When I was younger in the faith, this story, that what happened there, I kind of laughed when I read it, but it didn't have a whole lot of meaning. Demons in people, and then people taking a beating for all this, and you say, well, when I was younger in the faith, and as I went around, I was not really aware of how much of this goes on. I'm just to tell the listeners here, I'm not going to elaborate, but I'm just telling you right now. Now, since I've been at this going on 50 years, on things I've seen with my eyes and heard from my ears, I am absolutely convinced about demons being in human beings and all that goes with it.
Yep.
So I learned one after the other, year after year. I'm looking around and I'm listening to what's going on in and around the proclamation of Jesus, him crucified and raised from the dead. Now I look at that, I'm like, no doubt about it. Yep. None.
Yeah, and a lot of people have asked us about this, and I've told them, look, the spiritual realm of Satan and demons and evil spirits, all that's it hadn't gone anywhere.
It's no.
until it's all over. But it does seem to be a little more active, maybe, in this era, because
for the ones who say, "Well, I've never seen anything like that," I have just one little phrase here. I have.
Yeah.
So
yeah, along with a lot of other people I trust have dealt with that.
Well, I think what happened after all this is a riot came up because they're sharing Jesus.
Have you noticed almost every city ending here ends with a riot?
Yep.
Because I think it comes back to you have to have a belief system to justify how you live.
Yep.
Whether you acknowledge it or not, people in Hollywood that you think are a million miles from God, they have a system in their mind. Usually a work system, you know, if I take care of the planet and I help people, then no matter what happens, I'll be okay. And so that's what people do
to
justify.
Could you say there's any rioting going on in the United States of America over various issues, including this one, Jesus?
But you know what I thought about, Dad? You're right. And in this case, we have the same actors every time. We've got these Jewish people that'll come in, the instigators, and get it going.
They have a narrative.
They got a narrative. And then you got the people who are in the city and they don't know what to think. You know, they're hearing one thing and the other. So they're trying to figure it all out, and chaos ensues. And that's exactly what happens today. There's one or two or three groups out there.
They come
together, and then something bad starts happening. It's just like what you're seeing here. It's pretty amazing.
Well, I think it's interesting, like in verse 23, when it says the disturbance comes up about, and they were known again as the Way, which is cool.
I love that.
And this silversmith, which I'm all about silver, especially finding it, you know, in the ground, Demetrius, he made silver shrines of Artemis, and it you know, he made a lot of money, it says. So he's looking at it like, well, wait a minute. If people put their faith and trust in Jesus, and if they have this power, that's going to hurt my business.
That's a lot less Artemis sales.
Well, right. And so
I wonder if that's happened much in these.
So he was motivated because this, he's looking at, this is his job. Yeah. And look, and before you say, well, this guy, you know, people, when they start talking about, hey, I got to provide for my family here. And these bunch of, you know, tent makers are hollering, and probably some trick where they healed the person. He's not believing that this guy just drove out a bunch of demons, and they all had a big bonfire, you know, burning all the magic and sorcery. I mean, it just seemed to him like, no, I'm going to provide for my family. So then he says, man, we know we receive a good income. And then he said, you see and hear this fellow Paul, and he's led astray large numbers of people here in Ephesus. So not only is he just like losing his way to provide, he's like, this guy's leading people astray. There's your false teacher.
They're going down the wrong road.
Yeah. He says that man-made gods are no gods at all. Yeah. What's the problem? There is danger not only that our trade will lose its name, but that the temple of the great goddess Artemis will be discredited, and the goddess herself.
Sounds like the high-tech companies, Al.
Yep.
Well, what I'm saying, it's easy when you read that, you think, well, so what? But like that Artemis would have been appeal, because I'm a hunter. And I mean, just to me, this is the Hunger Games woman, you know, with the bow. Yeah. And everybody liked Hunger Games. I mean, and so these people, they're hunters and they're fishermen, and they put their faith and trust in the Hunger Game woman. And they're making a lot of money.
Yeah.
Everybody's feeling good. And so that's kind of what happens in our society. It's a threat to their way of life.
Yeah, he's saying but also the temple of the great goddess of Artemis will be discredited, and the goddess herself, who is worshipped throughout the province of Asia and the world, will mm-hmm. be robbed of her divine majesty. They've come up with another god here, of course, not realizing.
But he acknowledges that it's man-made. Yeah. They made it up.
Yeah.
None of it's real, but it's a way to make money. It's you know, a way to celebrate, you know, hunting and the outdoors and shooting bows and arrows.
But the first one premise is right. It's a way to make money.
Yep, it was money involved. And you notice every one of these little city tours of Paul ends up usually before some Roman proconsul who is just trying to keep the peace. And then the last verse.
Here come the politicians.
Then the last verse of 17, this happens almost every time. Then they all turned on Sosthenes, the synagogue ruler, and beat him in front of the court. Somebody's always getting beat up at the end of this run. Have you noticed that?
Well, what's weird to me also.
It sounds like what I've been looking at.
It does.
What's also weird to me.
Always somebody getting beat up.
You think about society. Now, here's this woman, this made-up woman, who is the god of fertility, but she was a virgin, which is, you know, that's true. I mean, they base that as fact. And I thought, that's kind of what the world does. Because anybody who's, you know, been around a woman who hasn't had the ability to give birth, it's a sad, sad time for them.
Yeah.
And so you say, well, what are we going to do about it? Well, come up with a goddess who can alleviate that problem.
Yeah.
You know, you go bow down and worship, and she'll make you fertile, which the god is made up. But I guarantee you, women who desire for that would do that, because the women that Missy and I have talked to, you know, through the years, they'll do anything. I mean, they'll seek out any option because it's a God-given desire.
In their culture, even more, because sons are what took care of you when you got old and became a widow.
But
otherwise.
Yeah, but if I was in the crowd, I'd want to raise my hand and say, but she's a virgin. Yeah, it doesn't even make sense that, you know, she's fertile, but just in word only. I mean, I don't know. I just found that fascinating, that it's like the application of it is, if you got a problem, you go here, even though it doesn't really practically make any sense whatsoever.
All right,
that's
out of time.
That's where we are in modern day, too.
I think there's a lot of correlation. I think you're right, Tim.
Thanks for listening to the Unashamed Podcast. Help us out by rating us on iTunes. And don't miss an episode by subscribing on YouTube, and be sure to click that little bell to get notified about new episodes. And for even more content that you won't get anywhere else, subscribe to Blaze TV at blazetv.com/unashamed.